Hey, Gators and sports fans, get all your Gator talk, news, analysis, and opinions on the Pod Up with Matthews in the Morning podcast. Find us on your favorite podcast platform or watch us on Facebook Live between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. every weekday. Pod Up, because we are Gator fans. So say, it's great to be a Florida Gator.
Morning and welcome to a Thursday edition of Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning from the Crime Prevention Security System Studios. Large enough to serve you, small enough to care. It's Thursday. You know what that means. We're going to be talking college football with our good friend, Heisman Trophy voter Brent Beard, here in just a minute. And the second portion is the Baker Sporting Goods High School Roundup. We'll be joined by Mike Rideout, who's actually down at the Final Four, called some games last night. We'll get his thoughts. Hawthorne moves on to play in the girls' state title game to try to go back-to-back, and we'll get his thoughts. But first, let's go to the Titan MR hotline, and we're joined by Brent Beard. Good morning, Brent. How are you?
Shane, I'm doing well. It's a wonderful time of year where we're keeping up with hoops with one eye and have the other one on spring practice beginning for a lot of teams. Obviously, Florida has already started. And over the next couple of weeks, believe it or not, when we're talking next week, it's going to be March. So we're within 2 or 3 weeks of several other teams starting.
Yep, there's no doubt about it. Gators are cranking it up. We'll get to that in just a minute. But first, there's been a little bit of playoff talk around the country. Give us a little update on what's going on there, Brent.
Yeah, I give Matt Baker credit for this. The sports writer, he caught up with South Florida's AD Michael Kelly. If that name sounds familiar, Kelly at one point was the COO of the college football playoff before he came to Tampa, and Kelly was quoted as saying, "I'm very excited, quite frankly, about the prospects of the college football playoff expanding in the future." So, again, there'll be a lot of off-season talk about this. The commissioners usually meet in April, which is basically right around the corner, to kind of discuss what's going on. I would be pleasantly surprised if they actually came out with some talk about what's going to happen. I think they'll have a lot of discussion. I don't know if they'll come up with any kind of answers yet, but I still think we're pretty close. And see, the other reason for Michael Kelly bringing this up is the fact that South Florida, he knows that if he ever has a really good football team, the only real way for them to get into the playoffs is to expand to 8. So I'm sure there's a little bit of self-serving stuff in there, but you can't blame him.
Yeah. So you think, you know, since we're talking playoff expansion and people have talked about this for countless hours, you think if it happens, they're going to go to 8 teams?
Yes. Yeah. Now, I've also heard there's a chance they may go to 6 first and then go to 8 later. But 8 is your, I think, logical number. In other words, if you get 8, you've got all of your Power 5 conferences represented, and you've got basically 3 wild cards. And if you did that, you would cover basically a lot of the angst and the weeping and gnashing of teeth that we're dealing with right now. I think that would do it. Now, look, some people want 16. I can see that to a degree, but I think if you want to keep the, as they call it, the integrity of the regular season intact, you go to 8, and that way you solve a lot of your problems.
Yeah, I agree with that. Brent, let's go ahead and run down through the SEC. Your national champs up in Tuscaloosa, they've had – I don't know if I've ever remembered, and obviously the transfer portal hasn't been around that long, but they have a bunch of, I shouldn't say a bunch, but they have guys leaving and entering the transfer portal.
Yeah, at this time of year, you see a lot of roster management is going to be the term that we're going to be hearing over the next few weeks, and this is going to be important. It is the Alabama. Now, quite frankly, a lot of these guys who are leaving were marginal players, i.e. like linebacker Ben Davis, who in his career at Alabama over 3 years had like 7 tackles. He's a really good specimen. He just never really picked up how complicated that defense was. Al Cahill, the linebacker, has entered the transfer portal along with Ben Davis. Joseph Bulovas is committed to Vanderbilt. He's one of their kickers. So I think the point is we're going to see this in Alabama and a lot of other schools. And I give Saban credit for this. For these guys who do not work out, he works hard, and I've been told this by parents of players, he works hard to get these guys into another school. So hopefully all these guys will end up somewhere else. But look, Shane, and you picked up on this a few months ago, when you have all these players going into the transfer portal, some of them are not going to find homes, and they're just going to be kind of drifting along. And the transfer portal, the grass is not always greener on the other side, is it, Shane?
No, and like I said, we talked about it, I think, last week. I read a stat where like 76% of the kids that have entered the transfer portal since last year are still sitting in the transfer portal.
Correct.
We got a Facebook Live here brought to you by Melvin Law, the only official law firm partner of the Florida Gators. And Dan says, and I was going to bring this up after you mentioned, you phrased it marginal. Marginal with Bama is a 4-star grant, is what he said.
Yeah.
So these kids that, as you said, he was marginal at Bama. I mean, gosh, he had to be highly recruited coming out. He had to be a 4 or 5-star going to Bama. So you would think that the Alabama players that enter the transfer portal, even though they don't have a lot of tape, they probably should find a home, don't you think?
Yeah, I would think so. They've got another defensive lineman, Ishmael Sopshire, who transferred to Southern Cal. For a lot of these guys, some of them want to go back home, and I get that. But your point's a good one. Here's a reality for a guy like – we mentioned Ben Davis a few minutes ago. He wasn't that productive, but the thing in Alabama that you're going to get – is you're going to get as probably as good coaching as you can get anywhere. So that's going to be a real advantage for some of these guys who go to these other schools. And to your point, I mean, they may go like Kevin Harris, who's a linebacker, transferred to Georgia Tech. I mean, he could go to Georgia Tech and dominate there because of what he's learned. So that is a good point, and I'm sure that Alabama transfers will be looked at pretty heavily.
Yeah, they're probably the first ones that get all the phone calls. Before we leave Alabama, Bryce Young takes over, I would assume, at the quarterback position now that Mac Jones is moving on to the NFL.
Yeah, and it's a real shame for him that he really did not get more time last year. But Young really needs to get bigger. I mean, he's 6'5", 11". Last August, he got up to about 203. He certainly wasn't that big during the season. But you've got Bryce Young. You've also got Mark Tyson, who is Bear Bryant's grandson. And frankly, is a pretty good player. I've been told by several folks he may have the strongest arm on the team. Certainly probably not as accurate as Mac Jones was. But that's what they expect. And I'm curious your take on this, but Young did not have a spring last year, and that hurt him. So they're hoping the 15 practices what will make a real difference. Now, for experienced players, spring is probably, you know, they yawn through it. But for guys like Young, who really need to get some time on the field with his teammates, it's going to be invaluable for him.
Yeah, it is. And again, he's going to be entering the year as a true freshman, you know, in the program, because last year didn't count. And before we move on to Auburn, you brought up a good point, and you phrased it, roster management. You know, I don't think people realize with the COVID rules where you were able to increase your roster from 85 scholarships to, I believe, 95. Is that correct, Brent?
I still think we've got that 85. See, well, overall situation, but your point's a good one in that they're making room for the guys who are returning, and it's not counting against this year's number. So,
right.
Listen, Shane, we almost have to be an accountant to figure some of this stuff out this year, don't we?
Yeah, because I know next year, no matter what, they have to get back to the 85 scholarship athletes.
Right.
It's the same way with all the other sports. You know it's going to be a mess because some kids are going to have that exit meeting, and the coaches in a nice way are going to say, you need to go to the transfer portal. We can't keep you around.
Right.
We get a Facebook Live here brought to you by Melvin Law. John says, Cole Kubelik from SEC Network tweeted out yesterday that Gilbert may not play this year due to academics. Has Brent heard anything about that? I guess is he referring to Eric Gilbert, I guess, that the Gators got from LSU? Have you heard anything about that?
That would be my understanding. And I've heard there's some, and to be fair to Gilbert, he's got time to get everything in order, hopefully. I've heard that. I've heard there are some academic questions. How deep that is, I don't really know. But at this point, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt, hoping that he will have some sufficient time in order to get that together. Look, I've seen a lot of guys who were in academic trouble and needed a certain number of hours, or they because they transferred, that they are behind. And again, we got to remember there's a certain amount of hours you got to have toward a degree, is how it's phrased. And I don't know where that is with Gilbert. So the main thing for him, that's really a good point, is he may need to spend as much time on academics, obviously, over the next few months as he does get ready for the season.
Yeah, and there's also, and again, it seems like it changes each month, transferring within the conference, are you going to be able to play right away? So it may be a good thing if he has to sit out the year, get his academics right where he can move on. Because, you know, Brenton Cox had to go through that coming from Georgia.
Right.
They didn't allow him to play. So
sure.
We'll see. I never can follow the rules. It seems like they changed so much. Brent, Auburn, they've lost some kids to the transfer portal, but they also picked some up as well.
Yeah, they did. Dylan Brooks is the guy they picked up. He's a former Tennessee signee, four-star defensive end. What happened with Brooks is Tennessee made this mistake of when they released him, they had a caveat to it that said you cannot transfer to another SEC school. Well, Tennessee got a lot of backlash over that, and they changed their mind, and they allowed him to transfer wherever he wanted to go. So he ended up at Auburn, and he's a really good player. Also, he was at Roanoke, Alabama at Hanley, and it was impressive there, but things did not work out at Tennessee, unfortunately, as it was with a lot of, he was a four-star defensive end. Now, they've also had some other transfers. Mark Anthony Richards, their running back, is going to UCF to be with Gus Malzahn. By the way, Auburn spring game's April the 17th, and people may know Big Cat Bryant has also in the transfer portal. He was a solid player, but never was a superstar they thought he might be. But someone who could develop Bryant will get a really good player. So we'll see where he goes. He has 1 year of eligibility left.
Yeah. So I thought I'd read where he went to Tennessee at one time. Did he decide not to go to Tennessee?
I think that's still up in the air. I agree. I will double check with that and kind of see where that's going to be, just to make sure. But that there's still some question about that.
Yeah. Brent, sticking with Auburn for a second, you know, I don't know if we really talked about the Brian Harsin hire. I think it's a good hire. I don't know. Time will tell. But, you know, it's funny to me how – people, I guess, here in the South or wherever you're located, you know, they always say, well, he has no ties to the SEC, to the South, which is true. But some guy named Nick Saban didn't have any ties to the South either.
Yep.
When he was hired
right.
at LSU. So it's just funny to me, and it's always about how people go, well, he's never been a head coach before. Well, hell, you can't be a head coach until somebody gives you a chance to be a head
That's
coach.
That's right. That's so, right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Your thoughts on Brian Harsin real quick. Do you like that hire? Do you think he's – I mean, it's an uphill battle anytime you're in the state of Alabama with what Tuskers
sure.
are doing in Tuscaloosa. What do you think about him?
I mean, he knows what he's doing, I think. I mean, he was like 69 and 19 at Boise. What he needs to fix or immediately are two things. He needs to either fix Bo Nix, if that's possible, or find another guy and develop him. The other thing that they've really done an awful job with, and this is right on at Gus Malzahn's feet, is they did a terrible job of recruiting offensive linemen. And you would think for an SEC school that would not be a problem, but they, for whatever reason, just could not recruit tackles to save their life. So that they've got to fix. Now, what he's done very quickly, he's brought in some guys who have experience in the SEC, like Mike Bobo, for instance, and some other guys from the league. So he was smart in doing that. And Shane, you know how that works, is, okay, I haven't coached in the SEC, but I've gotten some assistants who I can bring in who have, so that will help him.
Yeah. At Chris Doering Mortgage, they do mortgage lending right, helping home buyers throughout Gainesville and North Central Florida. Call Chris Doering Mortgage today, 352-244-0840. We're speaking with Brent Beard on the Titan MR Hotline from the Crime Prevention Security System Studios. You can follow Brent on Twitter at Brent Beard. We'll be joined by Mike Rideout on the Baker Sporting Goods High School Roundup here shortly, talking about the Final Four and all the high school basketball playoffs. Brent, what's going on up in Georgia, up in Athens?
They're on the verge of starting spring practice themselves. Now, they've got some guys who they really need to have a good spring. Now, JT Daniels is going to be the quarterback at this point. I don't see that changing. Brock Vandergriff, who is a five-star quarterback, state of Georgia. He had a knee injury during the senior season, so they've got to get that taken care of. But Carson Beck is a kid from Mandarin who hopefully he will have a good spring. We haven't seen a whole lot from him right now, or at least yet. So I think it's going to be important for his development, as with Kendall Milton. Boy, they're going to be really good at running back. That's coming up. That's going to be a really loaded room. Aaron Smith is a wide receiver. Their receiver group has gone from a weakness to a strength with Kearson Jackson, George Pinkins, and guys like that. So, this is going to be a loaded football team with a lot of expectations to get back to Atlanta after the Gators taking their spot last year.
Yeah, and Baton Rouge, it's a mess, Brent, from the Will Wade FBI scandals, which we still – I mean, it's been going on for a couple of years now. But football is a mess, and now there's an investigation into Les Miles, correct?
I think the most amazing thing about this to me is how in the world did they keep this quiet for basically 3 years. Now, USA Today is who came out with this, and we need to give credit for that, but Miles has basically the thing that's come out is the fact that in the Advocate in Baton Rouge also reported that he had reached a settlement with an LSU student who accused Miles of hitting on her. Now, look, this is it. Well, we're not making this up, and this is not a rumor. This is from a report, and the Advocate had several sources. Didn't have a lot of details about it, but USA Today sued to get this information, so it is out. I think the point in this that just stunned me is, and I'm quoting here, the news organization's reporting has prompted LSU to hire another outside law firm to audit its handling of roughly 60 sexual misconduct cases from 2016 to 2018. Now, look, that might be typical of colleges. I don't know, but that's an unbelievable number just to me. I'm sure some of your listeners may have some information on that. And again, we don't want to speak out of turn here because we're not attorneys. But to what Shane said earlier, the thing that really concerns me about this is LSU has this Title IX investigation going on now involving some former football players. You see this coming up now with the Les Miles. Shane, look, I don't care what you say about this. This is a bad look and this is something LSU is dealing with and has got to deal with.
Yeah, it's a mess, and as you mentioned, it's amazing that they kept it quiet as long as they did. Up in Oxford, Mississippi, Lane had a pretty good recruiting class. I know a lot of people in the state are excited about his program. When do they crank up spring ball?
They go in a couple weeks. And look, they're going to be really good at running back. Jaron Ealy's out for the spring. He also plays baseball. He's got a shoulder and knee injury. You remember those days, Shane, when you got through the season, you had not one but multiple surgeries, and that's what's going on with them. Snoop Connor, Henry Parrish are good running backs. And look, what makes them so dangerous is Matt Corral's coming back. You know they're going to be able to throw the ball, but when you can run the ball the way they have been, they've been basically amazing. Elijah Moore won't be around anymore. He's really tremendous offensive player himself. But the thing is that they're going to get better. They've recruited well. They own defense, mind you, not just offense, but they've done a really good job on defense. I thought Jeff Lebby would have a job by now. I'm curious if you did too. Their offensive coordinator is well thought of. So this Ole Miss offense is going to be, I think, even more lethal next year.
Yeah, I think, Corral is going to be the SEC preseason, maybe yes. Player of the year.
He may be.
He was outstanding last year. I still, until Ole Miss can stop somebody, you know, yep. I've said it many times, Brent, Lane coach is different than everybody else. People think he's gambling, taking chances and all that stuff. Well, you can, because everybody expects you to lose the game. If they get a decent defense, we'll see how his coaching changes. But they are going to be very explosive on offense. Tennessee, Josh Heupel has lost some players to the transfer portal. What's going on up there?
Well, it almost never ends. The latest is from their chancellor, who was on their Vol Calls radio show on Monday night, that the chancellor said they are wrapping up their investigation of the recruiting allegations, and then it will be in the hands of the NCAA. And she made a really good point when she said there is no timetable as far as when the NCAA will give us the results. And listen, Shane, I would be very surprised if they hear anything this year. Now, people are going to say, why in the world does it take that long? Well, these investigations just do. I mean, it may be a year or two before they find out. Some other things going on. Linebacker coach Brian Jane May he's come from Michigan, so he's joined the staff. They've lost another player, Jamarian Gooch, who is 6'7", 358. How about that size, Shane? Has signed with Missouri, so that will help them with their defensive line.
That is a big one. Texas A&M, we really never hear much about them because they're way out there out west. Had a tremendous year last year in year three under Jimbo. Can they take that next step to knock off Alabama, and what's going on with the Aggies?
Well, their AD, Ross Bort, came out and said they are planning on having a full attendance at Kyle Field. And look, digging a little deeper here, the reason he's saying that is they've got Alabama coming to College Station, and their biggest games are home this year. So if they can replace Kellen Mond at quarterback, that's going to really help them. They've got a really good linebacker core. A lot of these guys are coming back too: Aaron Hansford, Andre White, Chris Russell. So defensively, and you remember the Gator game, Shane, they were really discombobulated during a good part of that game, got it together in the fourth quarter, and were able to win the game. I still think Florida could have won that game. That would have made a big difference, but regardless, a big year, and now the expectations, I think, will just continue at A&M.
Yep. Facebook Live brought to you by Melton Law, the only official law firm partner of the Florida Gators. John wants to know, where is the Tennessee linebacker, Henry, and I'm going to butcher his name. Is it Toto? Tutu?
It's Toa. It's Toa. Toa.
Okay,
he is That's okay. That's understandable. It's an unusual spelling. Toa Toa is probably going to Alabama. His dad had an interview recently and said that he originally almost went to Alabama in the beginning, but he went to Tennessee. But now he's probably going. But Saban, and I credit his dad for saying this, Saban told him that he probably needs to wait until April. And this is apropos for a lot of things we're talking about, because they're expecting the waiver rule. Remember the where everybody gets the one free transfer without mm-hmm. having to sit out. That's probably going to come into being in April. So that will probably – so his going to Alabama or wherever he goes probably will not happen until April.
Yeah, and Dan says on Facebook Live, brought to you by Metal Law, look at the attendance at the Florida game last year in College Station. I'm sure they will be packed with fans in 2020. They did have a bunch of them. There's no question about
that. They sure
did.
Yeah.
And Dan wants to know, how does Bama have availability scholarship-wise? Well, they probably are very similar to Florida. You know, I think Florida has two scholarships open that they are possibly saving for the transfer portal, so I'm sure Bama has something to do with that
Yeah. And look, Bama also is in on, and this is another guy that's hard to pronounce, the number one defensive tackle who is the number one player overall in the recruiting ranking, still has not made his decision. And that's one of those guys that you save a scholarship for no matter who you are.
That's right. Brent, you got any nuggets for us?
Well, there was an interesting report out earlier in the week from The Athletic. And again, this is kind of a little bit about hot seat talk. And what interested me about it is not so much the guys on the hot seat, but the guys who potentially may retire. Now, we're not saying this is going to happen, okay? But it's always something interesting to look at. David Cutcliffe at Duke has been mentioned, and I still say Cutcliffe is one of the greatest quarterback coaches around anywhere at that time, too. Also mentions in the article guys like Frank Solich of Ohio, Rick Stockstill of Middle Tennessee, Butch Davis of FIU. Now, we're not saying this is going to happen, but it is kind of interesting to look at that and to see what might actually happen with some of these guys as they near the end of their career during that time, too. So, and again, Florida still in spring practice. We'll certainly be following them as it goes along, too. But between hoops and basketball right now, by the way, Missouri has hired Tulsa cornerback coach Aaron Fletcher as their DB coach. So we still have folks kind of fleshing out their coaching staffs. Former Ole Miss redshirt sophomore wide receiver DeMarcus Gregory is transferring to South Florida. To Shane, a little bit later we have time to talk about it. Interesting, it was public, all the South Carolina assistance and the money that they'll be making in that crew. Some of the names people may not be real familiar with. Torian Gray, I know they will be, mm-hmm. a defensive back coach, 3-year deal for $350,000. It's still going to be a while, isn't it, Shane, frankly, before Shane Beamer can not only get that staff together, but people need to be patient with him with that South Carolina roster.
Yeah, absolutely. Brent, before we let you go, I want you to hear This Day in Sports, which is brought to you by Comfort Temp. Comfort is our business. Peace of mind is our promise. This month, get a free annual maintenance plan with every residential duct cleaning purchase, $199 value. Service department's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for your convenience. All right, Brent, I know you remember this guy. 1977, New Orleans Jazz. Pistol Pete Maravich sets an NBA record for a guard with 68 points in a single game. Now, that's been broken. Now, I think Kobe had 80-something, but you remember old Pistol Pete with the New Orleans Jazz?
Listen, people in this day and age, if they have not seen Pistol Pete, and it amazed me why this really has not happened, but there were a few guys who could control the ball in a game the way that he could. The reason that people need to Google him is to see the drills. His father was a coach, and he taught him all these incredible drills as far as ball handling is concerned. But Shane, a lot of people have talked about this, and think about this with Pete. If the 3-point line had been going on at that point, can you imagine what he would have averaged per game and what he would have scored?
Yeah, you're exactly right. No 3-point line around back in those days, but he was a phenomenal player. I wanted you to hear that. So, Brent, good stuff as always. You can follow Brent Beard on Twitter at Brent Beard. Brent, we'll talk to you next week, my man. Be safe.
Look forward to it, pal. Take care.
Yeah, we're going to take our first time out of the program. When we come back, we'll be joined by Mike Rideout, talking a little high school sports on the Baker Sporting Goods High School Roundup. You're watching and listening to Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning from the Crime Prevention Security System Studios. We'll be right back.
Hey, Gators, this is Coach Steve Spurrier. Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
We want to take this moment to thank all our sponsors who keep the show going and pay the bills. Our Gridiron sponsors are Crime Prevention Security Systems, large enough to serve you, small enough to care. Titan MRI, Gainesville's only locally owned and operated MRI facility. Meldon Law, where you matter most. Peachland Dental, Gator Nation's first choice for dentistry in Port Charlotte. Comfort Temp, comfort is our business, peace of mind is our promise. G-Tech Sport, keep your athletes in the game with G-Tech Sport. Celebration Point Town Center, Center State Bank, Chris Doring Mortgage. Some of our touchdown sponsors are Campus USA Credit Union, Adams Rib Company, Doreen Wiebe Realtor Caldwell Banker, M.M. Parrish, Gator Dominoes, Celebrate Primary Care, Gator Bait Media, Davis Gainesville Chevrolet, Neapa Latin Cafe, Rap Spot, Okito America, Gators Dockside, Style Cuts, Ironwood Golf Course, TB Financial, Meadowbrook Golf Course, Darshakow Insurance. If you are interested in promoting your business on the show, visit potupwithshane.com and click the advertise button. Again, thank you to all the great businesses that support the show. If you like what we are doing here, make sure to follow us and support the businesses that support us.
Welcome back to the Crime Prevention Security System Studios at Center State Bank. We put business first. We are the largest community bank in the state of Florida and understand that small businesses need a community business partner that they can rely on. Center State has 4 convenient Alachua County locations. Center State Bank, member FDIC. Before we get to Mike Rideout, make sure you go to potupwithshane.com and you can enter to get one of these Chomp Harder hats. It's just a free drawing. And our winner this week is Greg Inez. Greg Inez wins the Chomp Harder hat, and also the winner of our G-Tech Sports Survival Kit. You just go to potupwithshane.com, and we just draw your name out of the hat. It's John Williams. So make sure you check out that website, folks. Our staff has done a tremendous job with putting that thing together. So let's go to the Titan MR hotline now and head on down to Lakeland, and we're joined by the PrepZone.com's Mike Rideout. Good morning, Mike. How are you, bud?
Hey, good morning, Shane. I actually made the trek home last night. It was a late one, but I am back in Gainesville. I got to get ready for our next one. We've got boys basketball region final tomorrow. So Marty is actually still down in Lakeland. He's going to be broadcasting Bishop Kenny this morning, but I had to get back.
Okay, let's start first. You guys called the Hawthorne-Trenton game last night. It was a semifinal game in the Final Four. And we're going to talk girls basketball. And Cornelius Ingram, once again, is going to be playing for back-to-back state titles, right?
He is, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, all things considered with COVID, et cetera. They're 20-4. They've played a tough schedule. They've, you know, again, stepped outside of 1A competition, which they have been rolling. Shane, they haven't lost a game to a 1A team since they lost to Holmes County in the 2019 1A state semifinals. That year, it was Trenton that won the state title. So, so last year, Hawthorne won. The year before, Trenton won. So you had the previous two state champions going head to head. But yeah, it's been a fantastic year for Cornelius Ingram and the Hawthorne Hornets. 20-4. They're going to play for a state title. Last night they beat Trenton, got off to a good start, 17-10 in the first quarter. their senior really came through for them last night, Jayla Williams. She scored a game-high 25 points, so she almost single-handedly has scored as many as Trenton scored last night. Trenton had 32. She had 25, but she was phenomenal. She scored in every quarter and even finished strong with 9 points in the fourth quarter. You know, this Hawthorne team has a bunch of weapons. Maya McGraw, who transferred from PK Young, a little foul trouble for her, so it was hard for her to get in a rhythm last night. Of course, she was going against Samari McHenry of Trenton as well. And for Trenton, I mean, that was their third state semifinal appearance in 7 years under head coach Brian Fry. So it was kind of unique that we had two area teams not only going head-to-head, but they were the previous two state champions. You know, so kind of neat there. But, yeah, Hawthorne's going to play Ponce de Leon for the state championship on Friday night. Ponce de Leon was a winner last night against Port St. Joe in the other semifinal, 52-38.
So we got a Facebook Live here from John, brought to you by Mental Law. He says Ponce de Leon is pretty good. They are 21-2. Did you happen to see any of them? I know we don't get to see a lot of those schools out in the Panhandle very often, but when you look at this matchup between Ponce de Leon and Hawthorne, do you give the advantage to the Hornets?
I mean, I think you would have to give the advantage to the Hornets. Honestly, I didn't see much of the game because I was doing my pregame interviews during the game. But like you said, yeah, they are 21-2, so only two losses this year. I think it's a winnable game for Hawthorne. They've got that experience. You know, this is I mentioned their loss in the 2019 state semifinals. So this is their third straight trip to Lakeland and then coming off a state championship. You know, this Ponce de Leon team is certainly beatable, even though they're 21-2. They went undefeated in their district this year. But I think I do like Hawthorne's chances. I just feel like as long as they play within themselves, I think that they've got a chance to win this game. Of the two losses that Ponce de Leon had this year, one of them was to a team from Alabama. So, you know, they've played pretty well this year. The other team was a team from Graceville, I believe. So a winnable game. But again, we'll see if they can just do what they've been doing. And what they do, Shane, is they are relentless on defense. Jayla Williams got into the lane a bunch of times, got fouled 11 of 13 from the free throw line. So not only was it her ability to shoot from the outside, which she knocked down a couple of threes in the game, but also to penetrate, get those fouls, get to the line where she did convert. And this is also a Hawthorne team that lost Liana Bowie, who was averaging 12 points per game. She was injured in January, so they've been playing without her and still been piecing it together. But they've kind of been on a mission. You know, it's a close school, close program. The Hawthorne girls went to watch the Hawthorne boys on Tuesday night. They didn't make the trip down to Lakeland until yesterday morning. And the same thing, the guys, you know, went and watched them play. That's just how they are. You know, I think I mentioned this to you when the football team made that run to the state championship game, the Hawthorne girls basketball team, they were the water girls on the football team. So it's a very close-knit family-type atmosphere over there at Hawthorne.
Yeah, it really does. It really is. And before we move to boys basketball, I mean, Cornelius has done a tremendous job with these girls. You've called a lot of their games and seen a lot of their games, Mike. Is it just because he's been there, done that, played at a high level, that he just demands so much from his girls? I know he also has I want to say one of his girls is 6'3", which has to be a girl who can dominate at the 1A level. Is that part of it as well?
Yeah, that's Maya McGraw, who's actually going to be playing at UNC Charlotte. So
okay.
You're right. Maya McGraw, the transfer from PK Young, 6'3" senior. She's averaging a double-double, 11 points, 10.2 rebounds. But the thing that makes her, I think, the most effective, and CI told me this last night, she typically does draw double and triple teams, and that has helped her develop her passing game. He said that she's one of the better passers on the team, so that defense collapses on her, and she's able to find an open teammate. So CI did admit that because they had that long run in football, it took away his time to work with the girls, you know, from a conditioning standpoint, early in the season. Now, he said he wouldn't miss a practice. He may be late for a practice, but he would still be there. But he gave his girls props for the way that they attack things because, again, they were the hunted again this year because they were the number one team or because they were the defending state champions. They beefed up their schedule. Bishop Kenny, I just mentioned, they played Bishop Kenny this year. which is playing this morning in the state semifinals. They play Bartram Trail, another big school. They play Jacksonville Reign. So only four defeats, but they play that type of schedule that gets you ready for this moment. And that's why I think that Hawthorne is going to beat Ponce de Leon and win the state championship, win it back-to-back. And what a year it's been for Hawthorne Athletics when you consider the fact that, you know, last year the boys basketball team won the state title, girls won the state title, football team got to their first ever state championship game. So it's something special going on over there at Hawthorne.
There's no question about it. All right, so let's move to boys basketball. Tell us what round we're in. We're getting close to their Final Four, and what teams are still hooping in our area?
Well, unfortunately, in our area, we only have one. That one team is Santa Fe High School. Let me tell you about the teams that did not advance. I mentioned Hawthorne. Hawthorne had the a tough trip. They had to go to Wildwood. Last year, they hosted Wildwood, beat Wildwood to go to the Final Four. This year, though, Wildwood was the home team. Wildwood won that game 72-58. Trenton, which won its first district title in 21 years, they were looking to make the state semifinal, Shane, for the first time since the 1950s. But they lost at home to Madison County, 64-50. So Madison County will play Wildwood in the Class 1A state semifinals on Wednesday. St. Francis Catholic lost very early, but they did make it to the postseason. They won back-to-back district titles. St. Francis Catholic lost at home to St. John Paul II in Class 2A. P.K. Young, a game that I called, Shane, overtime game, and then a kid hits a shot from almost half court, banked it in at the buzzer to beat P.K. Young, Trinity Prep. So, yeah, tough loss for P.K. Young in the first round of the state playoffs, 68-66, but at least they did get into the postseason. We'll get back to 4A in just a minute, but the other couple of area teams in 6A, Lake City Columbia, really rolled in their game at Tate in the first round of the playoffs. They scored 96 points, 96-73 against Tate, but they hooked up with Tallahassee Lincoln in Tallahassee, a team they lost to in the district championship, and Lincoln won the next meeting again, 49-41. So Lincoln will travel to Ocala Forest. So Forest is still alive. Forest beat Fleming Island of Orange Park in the opening round by 5. They beat Fletcher out of Neptune Beach, 63-50, a decent Fletcher team. So that should be a good one. And again, the good news for that, for Forest, is that game is going to be in Ocala. But getting back to Class 4A, the only area team that we have left in the Gainesville area, that is, Santa Fe High School. Shane, it was a baseball score at the end of the first quarter. Eastside failed to score in the opening quarter. Santa Fe led 5-0. And then it was a halftime a football score at the half. Santa Fe led Eastside 14-7 at the half. Both teams really struggled shooting the basketball. Things did pick up a little bit in the second half. In fact, Eastside made a little bit of a run in that game, even though they were down at the half. They ended up taking the lead thanks to Quay Brodus, who came off the bench and really caught fire for them. Quay Brodus pretty much single-handedly brought them back in that game. Brodus scored 10 points in the third quarter. He hit his second three of the quarter to give Eastside that lead, 17-14. But then Santa Fe had Dontrell Jenkins. He's only 5'7", Shane. But, you know, they say big things come in small packages. Jenkins got in some foul trouble early in the game, so he sat most of the first half. But he caught fire in the third quarter. He hit three threes to kind of match what Brodus was doing for Eastside. Finished with 18 points. That was a game-high 18 points for him. And, you know, Santa Fe gets the win. 41-31 was the final score. So Santa Fe will head to Lake Highland Prep in Orlando. And even though that's not your typical Lake Highland Prep team, I don't know if you remember the name Joel Berry, the guy that was in fact, he was the first ever three-time Mr. Basketball Award winner, went on to play for North Carolina, won a national championship at North Carolina. Well, he's not there anymore, but his younger brother is. So it will be an interesting matchup as they take on Jared Berry, who's averaging 17.9 points per game. But, you know, Santa Fe, this is a team that you got to like their chances because of their big men. You know, Papa Ross, Ernest Ross, who's the North Carolina State signee, 6'9" senior. He had 12 points against Eastside the other night. They've also got a 6'7" senior and Jonathan Lee. So they got some length on the inside. I mentioned the guard play of Dontrell Jenkins. So I think that Santa Fe's got a chance to win this game, even though it's over there in Orlando. But unfortunately, that's the only area team left in this, other than, you know, the Forest of Ocala in this area.
And so if Santa Fe beats Lake Highland Prep, they go to the Final Four, correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, it's a shame because Eastside had a really good year. They only lost three times, if I'm not mistaken, the entire year. All three games were to Santa Fe, correct?
How tough is that, right? Yeah, because they're their kryptonite. I mean, you lose only three games all year long. Eastside finished 21-3. They had a home loss in overtime to Santa Fe. They lost by 1 point in the district championship game to Santa Fe. And then they lose, you know, the game on, you know, earlier Tuesday night. So, yeah, just it's tough to have your season come to an end, your only losses being to the same team. So, yeah, Santa Fe, give them credit for finding a way to get there. Elliot Harris has done a tremendous job with that team. They're 18-5. They played a tough schedule. They started out 5-0, and then they played some good teams, and they had a little stretch where they lost four in a row. They also lost six games due to COVID, so they've had to go through that adversity. But since then, Shane, they're on a roll. They're 13-1 since, playing really good basketball right now. But yeah, unfortunate that one of those teams had to lose, and you know, Eastside had a great year. Pop Williams, you know, did a tremendous job with that team. Jarvie Ganey was held to only 5 points against Santa Fe. So, yeah, tough loss for Eastside. But, again, only one team can move on. So it will be interesting to see, because the state semifinals, you've got the winner of that Santa Fe-Lake Highland Prep game against either Marianna and West Nassau. And West Nassau has really caught fire. They beat Bishop Kenny of Jacksonville. They beat Paxton of Jacksonville in a close one, two-point game. They're led by Devo Coleman, who was signed with Georgia Tech. So we'll see if West Nassau can get the win against Marianna. They will host Marianna for the right to go to the Final Four. And again, Santa Fe will be on the road for the right to go to the Final Four. So yeah, fun time of year with Final Four, you know, this week for girls basketball. And then next week it'll be the state tournament in Lakeland for the boys.
We got a text here for you, Mike. It's from the Titan MR text line. It comes from Hank. He wants to know, Mike, do you know if the big kid from Santa Fe, who did he choose NC State over? Do you know the other schools that he had a potential to go to?
I would have to look that one up. I can't remember off the top of my head, okay. Shane. I know that at one point he did get an offer from Florida. The interesting thing about this kid for Santa Fe, Shane, even though he's 6'9", he's projected to play guard at the next level. He's got the handles. He hit a three in the first quarter against Eastside. So he can shoot from the outside. He can dribble the basketball. So, yeah, I think that's kind of interesting. You know, you kind of see your guards get bigger at the next level anyway. But I thought that was kind of interesting that he's going to get a chance to play guard at the next level at North Carolina State. And who knows, maybe that had something to do with why he ended up choosing NC State.
And real quick, Mike, before we let you go, because I get so confused with the state of Florida when it comes to classifications. Correct me if I'm wrong. Eastside is 5A in football. Santa Fe is 4A in football, but they're both 5A in basketball? That makes no sense
4A.
To me. They're both
4A.
How does Eastside go from being a 5A school, drop down to a 4A school in basketball?
You know, it's so hard to keep up. It really wasn't, but maybe a few years ago when we had 9 classes, which was ridiculous, and we couldn't keep, it's hard to keep up with that many classes. Mm-hmm. We're down to 7 classes, which is good, but I can't explain that. I get confused. Just when you get comfortable and you learn the classifications, they go and change it again on you.
Well, I just don't understand why every sport at X school should all be, mm-hmm. if you play 6A football, you should be 6A in basketball, baseball, track, golf, everything, but it's not like that. And it's so confusing. And I think the state of Florida is the only state that does it that way. So they, in my opinion, they need to fix that.
The only thing I can say there in that situation, Shane, is that there are 8 classes in football.
Right.
So that's probably why it's a little different in basketball. You got one less class.
Right. But my point is, let's say Buholtz is a 7, they play 7A football.
Okay. Yeah.
Do they play 7A basketball?
No.
See, that makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes absolutely no sense.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Because they're going to play the same schools that they play in basketball that should be 7A. I mean, in football.
Right.
Yeah. So why they don't all just stay the same classification? So I guess we can have an entire podcast on that.
Yeah. And again, I think that's the point that I was making is that there's one more class in football than there is in basketball. So with 8 classes in football and only 7 classes in basketball, it would make sense that you don't have 8A schools in basketball. So they're playing 7A and it kind of trickles on down as an example.
Right. So an 8A school, there are a lot of 8A schools in Orlando, I think. I think West Orange is maybe an 8A school in football.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Seminole, which won the state title, Osceola, 8A, you know, beat them in the state championship game. Right.
My point is, they're an 8A football school. What makes them drop down a classification in basketball when they should play all the other 8A schools for a state title in basketball? That's what I do.
One day you and I are going to have these conversations and talk about the private versus public. I think we would carry a whole show with all this stuff.
Yeah. Yes. Last thing before we let you go, who y'all broadcasting? Are you doing tonight and tomorrow for PrepZone.com?
Well, Hawthorne won't play until Friday. So because we've got a conflict with boys basketball, because you can watch Hawthorne's game online, we decided to broadcast boys basketball in the region finals. So I'll be making the trip along with Marty down to Orlando on Friday night to broadcast Lake Highland Prep and Santa Fe. And by the way, if you want to draw comparisons, if you want to try to get a feel for the game, Lake Highland Prep and Santa Fe have two common opponents. Lake Highland Prep lost to Santa Fe Catholic 57-55. Santa Fe beat Santa Fe Catholic 60-53. And also Lake Highland Prep lost to Bishop Snyder in Jacksonville 57-49. Santa Fe beat Bishop Snyder 53-50. So there's two commonalities there. Santa Fe's 2-0 against the team that Lake Highland Prep lost twice to. Lake Highland Prep's 13-7 this year. And like I said, it's not the Joel Berry Lake Highland Prep, but they do have his younger brother. So the fact that Santa Fe has to go on the road, it'll still be a tough matchup. But yeah, we'll have coverage 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock tip on Friday night, Santa Fe Lake Highland Prep on 106.9 FM and also online, audio online at imcountryradio.com. And by the way, let me a quick plug too, Shane. As you know, yes, I have the Prep Zone, but I'm also the sports director for MainStreetDailyNews.com. So I have an article up, a recap of last night's game between Hawthorne and Trenton at MainStreetDailyNews.com.
Good stuff, Mike. Appreciate it. Y'all do a tremendous job there at the Prep Zone. Appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks, Shane. Appreciate the time. Have a great week.
Yeah, we're going to take our second time out of the program. When we come back, we're going to wrap up this Thursday edition.
We want to take this moment to thank all our sponsors who keep the show going and pay the bills. Our Gridiron sponsors are Crime Prevention Security Systems, large enough to serve you, small enough to care. Titan MRI, Gainesville's only locally owned and operated MRI facility. Meldon Law, where you matter most. Peachland Dental, Gator Nation's first choice for dentistry in Port Charlotte. Comfort Temp, comfort is our business, peace of mind is our promise. G-Tech Sport, keep your athletes in the game with G-Tech Sport. Celebration Point Town Center, Center State Bank, Chris Doring Mortgage. Some of our touchdown sponsors are Big Mills Cheesesteaks, MB Listing, Cornerstone Financial, McDonald's of Gainesville, My IT Masters, Gainesville Neon and Signs, 84 Lumber, Tropical Smoothie Cafe, Chick-fil-A on Archer Road, Avery and Smith, Dowling Signs, Chomp Carter Apparel, Ruse Ogra Agent, State Farm Insurance, Silver Cube Billiards and Sports Bar. If you are interested in promoting your business on the show, visit potupwithshane.com and click the advertise button. Again, thank you to all the great businesses that support the show. If you like what we are doing here, make sure to follow us and support the businesses that support us.
Welcome back to the Crime Prevention Security System Studios, Celebration Points, where the Gators go to celebrate with premium brands like Bass Pro Shop, Nike, Sensei, Dave & Buster's, opening soon, Prime & Pearl, coming spring of 2021, the HBC's new restaurant, Spurrier's Gridiron Grill and Visor's Rooftop Bar. we will see you at Celebration Point, where the Gators come to celebrate. I want to thank Brent Beard for joining us, and also Mike Rideout, talking a little high school sports. Make sure you tune in tomorrow, folks. We'll have JC, and then we'll have Jimmy Dykes talking college hoops from ESPN. Make sure you tell all your friends and family to follow our show. You can like it if you want, but we want you to click the follow button. You can also follow us and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio. There's about 39 other platforms. So go subscribe, follow us. Today's show's a wrap, brought to you by WrapSpot. Be safe, folks. See you tomorrow.